following audio is from Fathom Church in Littleton, Colorado. More information about Fathom can be found at fathomchurch.org.
Let's get into it. If you would grab a Bible, please. There's Bibles all around you. You can open your Bible that you brought with you. You can open your phone or your tablet. We're in Genesis chapter 11 today. I ask that everybody grab a Bible and have it in hand because, yeah, we're going to put the verses up on the screen, but there's something different about holding your own text and reading your own text. And we've gotten away from this. I don't care if it's a physical text or if it's a digital text. Having your own Bible in hand is a positive thing. So we're in Genesis 11. Like Landon said, this is the last week in our Genesis series. We've been on 15 weeks in Genesis 1 through 11, and today we are going to culminate in Genesis chapter 11. And I've been pretty upfront with y'all through this sermon series about a lot of stuff, and specifically, I think it's been made very clear that I am a moron. Like, I mean, I've told you stories that are ridiculous, but they prove that I am, in fact, a moron. I am not the sharpest tool in the shed, okay? I mean, I just do a lot of dumb stuff, which lends itself to really good sermon illustrations, but also lends me towards things that are dangerous and painful and a lot of things. So with full disclosure, I need to share with you my latest incident of moronery. You may have noticed a few weeks ago I had this ace bandage here on my elbow. You can still see some remnants of a boo-boo that was big. Let me tell you what happened. Some of my crew and I decided we were going to go up to Clear Creek to go tubing. Anybody done this? Tubing? I've done tubing before, but it was in Texas on a river that moved very slow. Like, you could set a soda floating next to you, and it would float with you the whole way. Like, it would never float away from you. Just a nice, easy. This was not tubing like I had experienced. Up on Clear Creek, the tubing is more like whitewater rafting on an inner tube. Because there's these rapids, and there's rocks, and there's tight turns, and it was more intense than I had really thought. Well, and we were having this good day. You know, the guys, you know, we're tubing all day. It's kind of cold. We're freezing, but it's fun. And here's what happens when guys get together. Guys my age get together. Hey, I told you I was a moron. This is what happens. Guys in their 30s tend to revert to a mindset of their 20s or their late teens when they're together. And so we had been tubing all day. And we thought, you know what, let's do one more launch, one more jump into the river. It will be fun. And we're bringing ourselves into this mindset of, man, I'm 18 or 21. This is going to be good times, except for the fact that we're all in our 30s now. Well, this is what happened. I felt like I needed to make my last jump into the water more epic than the first jump. So there's this spot, this ledge, this rock that was probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 feet up from the water. It wasn't 10 feet. In my mind, it was. Justin. And so we had our tubes, and we were ready to jump in. So what we had done earlier, with great success, is you jump off the rock, and you land with your tube underneath you on the rapid, and you get going. But I'm a moron. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do something to make this more epic. And I thought, you know what would make this really cool? If I did a 360 in the air with my tube to ride on out. Land, it would be epic. All the guys would think I'm awesome. Well, it didn't quite go that way. And because we live in the age that we live in, with everybody carrying a device in their pocket that records high-definition video, we have proof. And so this, my friends, is a video of me doing this in slow-mo. Let's see it. So there I am with my tube, jumping. Whoop! And I didn't level out. And now I'm under the water, which is not calm. And there's my face. And Wait, there's still one bit that's even better here. Ben will come into the frame at the top left, and he's laughing at me. Thank you. As you saw, I did not manage to level out, and instead I went into the shallow water with rocks and rapids, and I went like, I dropped a bow on a rock underwater before I came out with that face of delight, right? And I dropped a bow on the rock, and I realized at that moment that that wasn't a smart move because the rock beat me. The rock won that fight, and I came up out of the water. So I managed to get out of the water, and I was just kind of standing there a little in shock. Ben's still probably laughing at me in the corner. And the guy who's taking the film, another friend, he's holding the camera, and he says, "Chris, are you okay?" I said, I was like a little dazed, you know, and I didn't know if it was the cold of the water or just the shock of the moment, but I was like, yeah, I think I'm okay. I think I just hurt my elbow. I'm okay, though. He said, "Chris, you're not okay. You need help." And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, what is, and as I'm standing there, I look down, and there's blood running all down my arm, and I'm not good with my own blood. You know, and so there's blood running, and he says, "Chris, you really messed your up. You need help." And I started feeling a little woozy, and I stumbled back to the shore, and thank goodness Ben's a kind of a paramedic guy because he wrapped me up and sent me to the urgent care. But I needed help, y'all. I was 5 stitches later and an evening in the urgent care. I was okay, but I needed help. Church, today we're finishing this study in Genesis, 15 weeks in Genesis 1 through 11, and I think we can succinctly sum up what we've seen here in one phrase. We need help. Genesis 1 through 11, the whole story is pretty much showing us that we need help, that we've got something wrong with us, and we need help. Like, ever since Genesis 3, every single week, has it felt like a downer for everyone else? I'm sorry that I chose this sermon series at some level, because every week it's like sin and sin, and things are spiraling out of control. And just when you think there's a little bit of hope, God wipes everybody out. And he starts over, and you're like, okay, maybe this reset's going to help. And then more sin shows up. And over again, we just see that there's a problem, and we can't seem to fix it. We can't seem to help ourselves, and so I think the message here is that we need help. And today, we're coming to the end of our time, Genesis chapter 11. And I think we're going to look at this passage that we're probably familiar with. But I want to use this as not just a teaching on this passage, but kind of a culmination for this whole sermon series. And we're going to see that we need help. And we're reading the story of the Tower of Babel today. Now, you may have heard this story preached. You may have studied this story in a Bible study, and they talk about languages, and they talk about different nations, and this is how all the different cultures of the world. I'm going to try and do a different thing with this, and I'm going to look at the fact that we need help, and I think this story kind of culminates this Genesis 1 through 11 in a way that shows us where we tend to go for help, but where we really ought to turn for help. So that's what we're going to see today in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. So if you would please follow along with me, we'll have it up on the screen, but if you've got your text in front of you, follow along with me. Genesis 11, 1 through 9. "Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly.' And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. And they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth.' And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, 'Behold, they are one people, and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning. This is only the beginning of what they will do, and nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them.' Verse 7, 'Come, Let us go down there and confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there, the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. This is the word of God for us this morning, church. So it's a familiar story, probably. You've probably heard this story, the Tower of Babel. And like I said, we're not going to look necessarily at the historical part of this as much as we are going to look at some places we seek help from. And so particularly this morning, we're going to see four places in the text where we tend to seek help. We tend to run to when we need help. And the first one is this. We seek help from our stuff. We seek help from our stuff. Let's look a little closer at these two verses, or three verses, 2 through 4. As the people migrated from the east, they found the plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Now, here's the history part. Right off the bat, it's mentioned that the people head east. They head to the east. Now, the east has been kind of this ongoing theme that we've seen in Genesis 1 through 11. So back in Genesis chapter 3, verse 24, after the fall, when God kicks Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden, it says that they went to the east of the garden. Okay? And then we see again in chapter 4, verse 16, after Cain kills his brother Abel, it says that, you know, God puts this curse on Cain, and then Cain moves to the east, further east, which is where he will eventually create his city. And so east is this motif that we see through Genesis 1 through 11 that continually is meant to represent moving away from God, moving away from where God was, where relationship with God was, and moving towards something else. And here we see again, people are migrating east. And figuratively, we're to say they're moving away from God. They're moving away from the God that created them. Yeah. So they move east, and they settle in this place called Shinar. And there, they perfect the art of brick building. They learn how to make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And then they say, you know what? We've got these bricks. Let's build us a tower. Let's build us a city. And that's their plan. That's all we get. That's all we get from their plan. But obviously, something is out of whack because God shows up and says, this is problematic. The city is problematic. Now, that doesn't mean that God is against cities. I mean, frankly, there are going to be plenty of cities in the Bible. In fact, the headquarters of God's people, Israel, will be in a city called Jerusalem, right? And eventually, in Revelation, the end of times, it's not that we go back to the Garden of Eden when God comes and makes all things new. He actually brings a city, the New Jerusalem. So God is not anti-city, but he's anti-something here. And what I think he's seeing here is the fact that they've migrated to the east, away from God, and now they're relying on their own stuff, their own ingenuity, their ability to make bricks and to build cities. They're seeking their help from their stuff. They're seeking their identity from their stuff. Think about how often, church, we do this. This is just the first thing that we see here, but think how often we do this. We find our meaning in our stuff. We find good feelings in our stuff. We find the ability to somehow justify our existence because of the things that we own. I mean, it's interesting how getting something new somehow makes us feel better as human beings. Does it not? I mean, does it not? Like you, there's a drug-like effect for getting new things. You get the new Apple Watch, right? And that watch makes you feel better. I mean, it seems a little crazy, right? It seems a little crazy, the drug-like quality that new stuff has on us. You get a new ride, and all of a sudden you think you're a better person. But you're not. You're just the same person with a new car and a lot of debt. You're no different when you buy something, but it makes us feel different. right? A new home makes you feel better about yourself, that somehow you're in a different echelon. But it's just a new house. Stuff has an effect on us that can be very dangerous if we're not aware of it. And I don't know about you, but I know this feeling. I can feel this low-grade kind of depression set in if I don't get something that I want. When I don't get something, or I lose something, or I break something, there's this angst and this feeling that reveals so much of my inside is tied to my stuff. Our whole lives can be dominated and consumed by these material goods. And we see a little glimpse of this happening here. They move away from God, and they seek to find their purpose in their building, their bricks and their city and their tower. This is a very real place that we can seek our help from. Our stuff is like a drug that we can use to numb us against the mess of our lives, the fact that we really do need help, but it will never satisfy us. So that moves us then onto the second place that we seek our help from. We seek our help from our stuff, but there's a second place that we seek our help, and it's from ourselves. I mean, look again at verse 4. Then they said, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves." So it's not just about their stuff, but it's about them, themselves. Let us make a name for ourselves. Is there a better mantra for our culture than that? I mean, this was written a long time ago, y'all, but is there a better mantra for our culture than "let us make a name for ourselves"? I mean, think about this. Our whole world is obsessed with ourselves. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of that shouts kind of a look at me thing. Now, I'm not down on them, okay, but it's very easy to get this individual me kind of mentality. And think about our fascination in our world with celebrities and news about them and pictures of their children and their weddings. And there's billions of dollars spent on this every single year. Marcy and I, I get up before her in the morning to read my Bible and to pray. I just need a little bit of time for myself. It's good for me. But sometimes she'll wake up, now that we have a little baby, not too far after me. And she'll come down and we'll get our coffee. And if I'm done reading, she'll almost always say this: "Hey, Chris, you want to turn on the news?" Now, I know what she means by the news. And it's not CNN. And it's not the local news. What she means by the news is the Today Show. Now, when you turn on the Today Show, the news, like, you get maybe a minute and a half of news every hour where they run over the biggest headlines of the day. And then the rest of the show is consumed with, like, cooking tips and fashion tips, and Al does some weather stuff every once in a while, and there's this old guy who talks about other old people presented by Smuckers. I mean, it's a bizarre news thing. But primarily, what you see is news about celebrities. This has become newsworthy information for us. We read blogs about it. We follow Twitters about it. I mean, Facebook news is not news, everyone. It's celebrity information. But this is our world. We are obsessed with individuals. We are obsessed with ourselves. And think about then, not just others, but how crazy our culture is about us. I mean, self-help stuff. And throw out Dr. Phil and Oprah. Throw that stuff out. But think about this. I'm thinking about the gym as a part of self-help, self-betterment, that's getting a little out of hand. Like, I'm all for getting fit, being in shape, you know, being healthy. Like, I get that, but the gym thing that I'm sensing around our nation is getting a little bit out of control. Like, I think this gym thing is starting to become a thing where a lot of people are finding self-fulfillment in how they feel, in how they look, in how much they can bench press, or how quickly they can do burpees, or, I mean, it's getting a little out of hand, but here's the truth. And I'm saying this to everybody really, really gently, but very true. you will be just as disappointed with a yoked up version of yourself as you are right now. Like, you get all swole, you start pushing it up, you hit the creatine, you do whatever you want. Like, you're going to be just as disappointed with that version of you than you are with you right this minute. You will be. Here's the test. 5 years ago, what did you think you were going to be like right now? I'll bet 5 years ago, if you could remember 5 years back, you would say, man, my life is going to be so much better in 5 years. I'm going to have this thing kind of taken care of in my life. I'm not going to be struggling with that. I'm going to be really fit. I'm going to fit back into those jeans that I keep in the back of my closet, even though I know I'm never going to fit back into those jeans. Like, in 5 years, I'm going to get there. In 5 years, I'm going to have a better house and a better car and a better job. And now we're here, 5 years down the road. How'd that work out? You living in the promised land? And my guess is that you think in five more years, you're going to get there. But you're not. We cannot self-help our way into fixing this problem that we have. It's not possible. If we seek help from ourselves, church, we will inevitably be let down, just like if we seek help from our stuff. So that moves us then to the third place that we're going to see in this text. The third place that we find our help, the third place that we run to when we realize that we're broken, busted people and we need to feel better. And that's in others. We seek help from others, from relationships. Again, verse 4, there's a little bit more I added in here. It says, let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. So the purpose of them building a tower and the purpose of them making a name for themselves is so that they can kind of hold on to this crew, this community, these relationships. Lest we be dispersed, we got to do this. We got to build this thing up. That's an interesting little bit. I don't know that I ever really noticed that until this week as I was studying. Lest we be dispersed over all the earth. They're against it. They're against being spread out. Now, of course, we know that ultimately they will be spread out. God says no, and he spreads them out, and he gives them languages and does all this stuff. But they're pumped about their stuff, and they're pumped about their own self, but they're also really into this crew that they're running with. They're really into this group that they're a part of. And they're working as hard as possible to keep those communities together. Now, this is similar to our stuff. It's not that cities were bad, and it's not that relationships are bad. God is not anti-relationship. I mean, marriages, he's going to say, big deal. Families, he's going to say, it's a big deal. His main move in the New Testament is to create communities of people called churches. Community is a big deal to God, but the warning here is to keep relationships in their right place. When we begin to seek our identity and our purpose and our fulfillment, when we seek our help in others, in our relationships, in our community, when we think that's going to sustain and give us the final thing that we're looking for, we will be let down. Relationships will let you down. I mean, how many of us think that other people will complete us? I mean, how many of us buy into that lie? I wrote this down because I want to read it exactly right. The fracture in the foundation of every relationship, whether it be a friendship or a marriage or a parent or a child, is the fracture of you will satisfy and complete me. You will satisfy and completely. Think about popular romantic movies portraying that we all need to find our soulmate. And if we find our soulmate, then life is perfect. But here's the thing, y'all. To my single crew in the room, that's a lie. And my married crew in the room will vouch for this. Let me ask you this. On the day that you got married, were you monumentally changed and completed at that moment? Like, you said, I do. You walked down the aisle, and that's it. I am complete. He's saying yes, but that's a lie. I know how this goes. Here's the thing. The only thing that happens when you say I do is you recognize just how much deeper your craziness goes, and that now you've linked arms with somebody else who's equally, if not more so crazy than you were, and you're in it together. It doesn't complete you. It just adds to it. And listen, y'all, marriage is great. But if you think that it's going to finish the job for you, if you think it's going to give you the help that you need, if you think all of a sudden everything comes into line the minute you say I do to that person, you're absolutely wrong. It's actually just going to complicate things. It gets messier. And it's a good messy, but it's a mess. Relationships will eventually let you down. I do premarital counseling for a lot of young couples, which is actually a fun and awkward thing to do. Sitting with a young couple who are not married and, you know, being their pastor and just making them blush, really, you know, talking about things that, you know, like sex, okay. It's a good awkward. It's fun. It's good counseling for me, actually. But one of the things that I do in every premarital counseling session that was done in my, when Marcy and I were doing premarital, is that I have the couple face each other and look at each other right in the eyes, and I make them each say this: you do not complete me. You are not the most important thing in my life. You're not the most important thing that I need. I will not put you in the place of my God. And I make them say that not to diminish the value of marriage, but to increase the marriage vows. Because in your brokenness, committing to be with one another through thick or thin is what marriage is about. But you cannot let your spouse become your God, because number one, they weren't created for that, and number two, they'll let you down. Church, we have to stop this relational craziness, thinking that our spouses or that our families or that our friends or our children will some, if only I just could have kids. Well, I'm in the thick of it, y'all, and it's awesome, but it's awful. This is just not how we were built. We are not meant to seek our help from others. So, that's it. Stuff, ourselves, others. The last one is kind of hidden here, but I don't want us to miss it. And the last one is this: we seek help from religion. We ultimately seek help from our religion. Look at it again, verse 4. It's easy to miss this. Come, let us build a city for ourselves and a tower with its top in the heavens. A tower with its top in the heavens. Yeah, the Babel crew, they're focused on the stuff that they're building, and they're focused on their own fame, and they're trying desperately to not be dispersed, to hold on to whatever kind of relationships they have that make them whole, but they're also trying to get their help and their meaning in their religious activity, in building this tower to the heavens. Now, the heavens is not the sky. It's not like, hey, let's just build a huge building, really tall, sways in the wind. You've been in New York and seen these huge buildings that, like, move? Creepy. But that's not what's going on. The heavens is where they believe that God dwelt. They're saying something religious in this, that we're going to build something that will get us to God. So when I say then religion and our, I mean, we're not building towers anymore, but what I say when I mean that we seek help from our religion, today I say this: I'm going to tilt the scales in my favor. I'm going to tilt the scales in my favor by being a good person. You know, that's what's going to satisfy me. I'm going to give myself over to some moral list of things to do or things not to do in order to appease God. Let me obey these commandments. And then if I'm good enough at keeping these commandments, the scales will tilt in my favor. If I can build the biggest and most impressive religious resume, then I'm good. I'll reach God. I've got it. I seek my help from religion. And I've told y'all before, this is the help that I'm most tempted to seek personally. This is where I run most often. I can get really good at playing the religion game, making myself look good, checking out the boxes. Like, I'm good at learning the language of Christianity and the culture of church, and I can argue a pretty good game when it comes to theology or philosophy, and I read and I study. But what I'm really doing at this point is I'm just seeking help from myself if I'm seeking help in my religion, but it's just with a choir robe on. It's the same thing as seeking your help from yourself, but it's just with a veneer of religiosity. covering over it. So those are the four places that we seek our help from, that we see in this little passage about Babel. We seek help from our stuff, from ourselves, from others, and from religion. And I think, if I'm not way off the mark here, that for everyone in this room, we could say, yeah, I check that one off. Maybe one or two or three or all four of them. Check those off. I tend to run to those things to make me feel like I'm okay, to make me feel like I don't have a busted up, bloodied arm. But these things will let us down. Every single one of these, our stuff eventually will crumble. You know what, you hear the adage, you can't take it with you? I mean, you can't. You really can't. Those Apple Watches, in 10 years, y'all, you'll be able to buy them at Goodwill. I love them. I don't have one, but I love, they'll be at Goodwill in 10 years, probably less. Your kids will think you're lame for having an Apple Watch. We'll joke about them like we joke about pagers. Like, that's what's going to happen with your stuff. It will let you down. And if we seek help from ourselves, listen, you are going to let yourself down. Because no matter how many squats you do, no matter how far you can run before you throw up, like, no matter how much you invest in your mind, it will fail you. No matter how much you invest in your physical appearance, it will let you down. No matter how much you invest your time into, you know, building up your I don't know, acumen or your ability or your hobbies, you're going to let yourself down because your mind, your mental capacities are going to diminish. And your body is not going to get better. Like, it might for a brief moment, but listen, y'all, it's moving towards yuck. Sorry. And if you seek help from others, then how fickle are relationships? Even the best ones. Even if the person doesn't let you down, eventually something will insert into that relationship that'll mess you up. So even if you've got the perfect marriage, one day one of y'all is going to die. And it's not going to be like The Notebook where you both fall asleep together and both die on the same bed at the same moment. Relationships will ultimately fail you. And then I would say religion. Religion will ultimately fail you. If all you do is just keep chalking up how you can somehow build a better resume in your religious prowess, it will let you down because God doesn't give a lick about your religious resume. In fact, this is the truth of this passage. Our help can only come from the gospel. Our help cannot come from these four things. To find the help that we need to deal with the mess that we've made of ourselves, it can only come from the gospel. And so religion seems like it might help, but it will not, because what happens is all that they're trying to do is build their resume, is get up to God. But that is anti-gospel. And you see this later in the text, in verses 5 and 11. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower. And then he says, come, let us go down there and confuse their language. And over again in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, the story is not about us somehow building our resume, moving up the org chart to get to God. But what the story is that he is about coming down to us, restoring what we lost in the garden back in Genesis 3, where he was walking around with them. And so the story of the Old Testament and into the New Testament is God coming down to us. Because once we turn the page to Genesis 12, we meet a guy named Abraham. And Abraham would start a nation called Israel. And then from that nation, there would come a line of kings. And the best king, the epitome of that kingdom, would be a guy named David, who killed a giant. Right? And then from that one king, David, there would be another promise given from God that one day from his line would come a king who could take care of the help that we need, who would finally fix the mess that we were in. And that's the story of the gospel. The story of the gospel is that our help came down in the form of a child. We're going to celebrate that in a few months. And in Babel, the story of the Tower of Babel, we see a quick foreshadow of this. We see a glimpse into the narrative of the entirety of redemption. We try and get to God, but he just keeps coming down to get us. So where do you guys tend to run? I mean, which of these things do you seek your help from? Which of these things do you cozy up to when it comes to your sin and your mess and your busted, broken lives? You run to stuff, or do you run to self-betterment, self-improvement? Do you cash in all your chips on your friends and your family and your spouse? Or are you just playing a religious game, trying to earn something that cannot be earned? Our help can only come from the gospel. And I was trying to think of an illustration that would aptly kind of sum this up. And I thought about this. Running to any of these four things, running to any of those four things for your help is kind of like a kid who doesn't know how to tie his shoes, trying to tie his shoes. Now, y'all with kids who have been in this zone, you're going to get this. But imagine with me that you've got a son and he doesn't know how to tie his shoes. And you're like, hey, buddy, we're going to go outside and play. Let's go outside. We're going to walk to the park and we're going to play at the park. And this is one of those parks with those spinny things and one of those scoopy things. It's the best park. And he's pumped. And your son is pumped because going to the park with his parents is the best. He doesn't know about Chuck E. Cheese yet. He doesn't know about Legos. All he wants to do is play at the park with you. And so you're like, grab your shoes and let's go. And so he runs upstairs and he grabs his shoes and he comes down and he sits on the stairs and he starts putting them on. And you're like, hey, buddy, you need me to help you with those? And he's like, no, I can do it. So he starts trying to tie his shoes. But remember, he doesn't know how to. He doesn't know how to. He's trying to imitate what he's seen you do, but he's fumbling. I mean, if you don't know how to do it, what an impossible task. And he's just working, and you can hear him grunting a little bit, and you're standing by thinking, like, y'all, that's easy. But he's working, and after a couple minutes, you say, hey, buddy, I can help you. Would you like me to help you? And he says, he's a little bit more irritated now, right? A little strong. No, I can do it by myself. And he's working harder, and his fingers are getting all twisted up, and he's not getting any closer. He's not like, oh, he's only a loop through the hole, kind of, you know, and he'll have it. They're getting knotted. They're getting messy. He's getting more and more irritated and frustrated, and you're just standing there. And you're thinking, if you just let me, it would be easy, and we could go out and play. I can fix that, but... So you ask one more time, hey, buddy, I would love to help you. Can I please help you? We can go out and play. And he is about ready to lose it at this point. Total meltdown, red in the face, vein popping out of his forehead. And he says, no, I can do it. I'm going to do it. And he breaks into tears, and he's screaming, and he's frustrated, and he's angry. And this is the image that we get of when we seek our help anywhere else besides the gospel. We're like a kid sitting on the stairs trying to tie his shoes. When daddy is feet away and he if he could just communicate, I know how to fix that. I know how to help you. And it's super easy. And then guess what? We get to go out and have fun. We get to go play at the park. But you have to let me. I can't do it without coming down and you admitting that you can't. I can't do it unless you let me in there and let me start. And you don't even know how easy it'll be. Church, this is how we are with our mess. We seek help from places that will never satisfy, that will never give us what we need. But it's only through the gospel, only through a relationship with Jesus Christ that you can find the help that you need, that you can have the fun that you want, that you can go out and play. So I'm going to have the band come back up here, and as we end, I want us to spend a little bit of time kind of digging into our own hearts. Listen, maybe you've been running to one of these four things. Maybe you've been running to a lot of these four things. Maybe your primary thing is, I've been trying to do this on my own. I've been seeking my help. I know that there's something busted in me, but maybe you've been running to these things. Listen, I would just encourage you today that you can confess that to God. Like, if you spend some time right now just in prayer on your own and say, God, I've been running to my stuff. I've been running to myself. I've been running to these things, but I don't want to do that anymore. And instead, effectively, you run to Him. If you do that, if you seek your help from the Lord, then He will be faithful to tie your shoes up and take you out to play. But you have to. You have to say it. Maybe for the first time, like you can say it for the first time and He'll swoop right in and tie up your shoes and it's going to be game on. But for those of us who've done it before, maybe hundreds of times, listen, we need to go again. Confession of our tendency to wander and run away from God is the hallmark of the growing Christian. So maybe it's the 101st time you need to confess that. That's what God would have you do this morning. So we're going to do this. We're going to take some time. Luke and the band, they're going to lead us in some music. But I would just say, take some time to pray, to confess, to repent. And then when you're ready, you're invited to come take communion. So every single week we come here to this table as a church. We do this every week so that we remember and end our time in the Word with a remembrance of the gospel, the cross of Jesus. That on the night Jesus was betrayed, he was meeting with his disciples and he said, hey, look at this bread. And he broke it and he said, this bread represents my body. And I'm gonna give it for you. And he took this cup of wine, we use juice, and he said, This is the cup of my new covenant. This blood that I'm going to spill is gonna be the thing that helps you. And every time you drink it, you remember me, you proclaim me. And Paul would say in 1 Corinthians 11 that every time we come to this, we proclaim again that Jesus is Lord. So take some time.